Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, what happens when an exciting day of driving the pace car in a race takes a violent turn to the supernatural? Did the spirit of a former driver return with a message? Those stories and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. We'd love to hear them. Of course, you can write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. And if you like the show, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person. Sign up to be one of those at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. That is where you'll get access to all of our bonus episodes, all of our advanced episodes, all those extra goodies there for you, all of it commercial free. And that's what helps support the program and keep it on the air. Check it out, ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. It's Tony and Todd with you on today's episode of the program. What's going on?
Last week, we talked a lot about unsolved mysteries, Robert Stack, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I started watching it again. It's on, I think, Pluto or something like that. They've got a whole channel of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I turned it on the other night, and I came to some revelations. Number one, brilliance. Like, the show is brilliance because while everything's very dated and everybody's got big 80s glasses and thick glasses and big hair and stuff like that, I mean, think about the amount of time that went into producing this show.
Yeah.
Because you had to get the story right. Somebody had to come forward to tell their story of, you know, the lost love or the murdered mayhem or whatever. Then they had to reenact it. They had to find actors who kind of looked like these people, reenact the thing. And then, you know, they had to film Robert out and about in scary locations telling the story and stuff like that. And 9 times out of 10, there was a follow-up. They found the person. They found the murderer. They found the lost love. Now there's a child involved. I mean, it was brilliance. Yeah. I mean, I love that show. Now I'm hooked on it again.
Well, and attention to detail, too, when you think about it. I mean, today, when someone's doing a paranormal show, it's like, well, just we're going to get a quick voiceover here and screw it. But there, they're like, we're going to get Robert Stack in a certain setting. He's going to be talking on camera, seeing him talking about these specific stories and being relevant to it. It's not just a random voiceover. There were so many moving parts that they paid attention to and made it just such a great piece. And it wasn't just quick, let's, you know, knock these shows out. There was so much work involved. And this is before digital. So everything you're doing is on tapes. It's amazing what they did with that show at that time.
I mean, down to like picking actors that looked really like the people that they were actually talking about. I was like, wasn't that the guy that was just talking? Oh, wait, that was an actor. This is the real picture of the guy, you know? And it's like, holy crap. It's just amazing.
And did you know how they did that with the actors? There was an interesting story on that. They would film these stories because they would go and, you know, get the testimonials from the people that are being portrayed in the story. But in those individual towns is where they would then film the scenes, usually because it would be respective of a certain house or setting. And it was always like just like community play actors and stuff. So the producers would just reach out to like the local community theater group and go, we're going to film this. Who do you got that fits this? And for being that's your source of your actors, they were actually pretty good in many cases.
I mean, yeah. And I mean, even the settings, like if, you know, if it's a story from 1952, they've got all the old cars there. They've got the old, you know, food stand with the ice cream and the, I mean, it's just what they went through to make that show look authentic was amazing. It's really a hats off to whoever was producing that thing.
Yeah, they would. They would set the historic settings really well too. I wonder what kind of budget that show had compared to like today's shows. It had to have been enormous to be able to pull off, you know, full scale, like it's the 1940s in a scene and they're at a diner or something. You know, it's like, that's not cheap to put together.
Right. And then just to pay Robert alone for his voice work, you know, and stuff like that. Holy crap.
Turns out everybody thinks Robert made a lot of money. He made Taco Bell gift certificates the whole time. That was it. He got a free chalupa at the end of every scene. And that was,
I like my tacos.
He was happy with that. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go to our first one. It says it was 2012. and I was an intern at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I was specifically a marketing intern, which means we'd go to various events around the area to sign people up for junk emails, facet information about the upcoming races and such. Sometimes we'd go to bars and clubs, late night events. After one of those events, we were taking back a pace car. These cars are a little more special, so rather than dropping them off in the admin building, we parked them in the infield on the track near the garage area. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway IMS is a very special track because it's not only was built in the early 1900s, it annually hosts one of the world's largest single-day sporting events as the venue's capacity is 250,000 people. Many people from all walks of life have walked through the gates, but as racing is a dangerous sport where drivers are wheeling themselves around an oval at hundreds of miles an hour, some people don't walk back out. Back in the day, it was honestly common for teams to lose drivers in fiery accidents. People could even die in the garages due to mishaps by the mechanics. It was just a more dangerous sport back then. People died somewhat regularly. Back to present day, it's between midnight and 1 in the morning. Myself, my boss, and one other intern are returning the pace car. Our boss followed us in an SUV so we can take on our remaining materials and drive back outside the track to our cars. The track is large, so walking back out is difficult. We're parked in the garages, stepping out of the cars, and the security guard stopped by to check on us and let us know it was just him tonight. Usually there's two patrol trucks driving around to make sure no one breaks into any damage. We tell him we're good, and he heads off. We're moving our product into the SUV, and we're slowly beginning to stop. And there's a soft sound, as though someone's phone was going off in their purse. But the type of music is more like something on a record player or a phonograph. The music got slightly louder, then suddenly a man's voice said, "Get out!" We basically all freaked out, threw the rest of the boxes in the back of the SUV, slammed the trunk closed, fought over who was getting in the front seat because we're in absolute panic to get out. We never looked up. We just got in the car and left when we reached the tunnel. We were finally like, okay, we all heard that. What was it? Our boss begins to tell us that sometimes that stuff happens. She wouldn't elaborate. In other stories, she just says, you know, a lot of people have died here. She's also explaining that until the mid-70s, early 80s, women weren't allowed in the garages, so the ghost was probably just mad at three women were there. I left so confused because I always thought that stuff was fake. I didn't understand my new discovery. Now I just assume that anything is possible. Interesting to get the message, get out, from a phone at a racetrack. Usually that's reserved for like Amityville or something like that.
Yeah, very, very strange. And you think back to that time period and you hear stories about unsafe conditions for workers, mm-hmm. unsafe this, unsafe that. A lot of people died doing things and being involved with things that today we kind of snicker at a little bit because we have all these safety precautions in place. But back then it was something that happened all the time. And a place like that certainly would have plenty of death or at least bad things happen where energy could be left behind. So, I mean, and to think how long ago, she says 60s, 70s, women weren't allowed in the garages. Crazy
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I'm curious how many people died at the Indianapolis Speedway. I wonder if there's an answer for that. That's easily accessible. 73 individuals have been killed at the Motor Speedway. 42 drivers, one motorcyclist, 13 ride mechanics, and 17 others, including a pit crew member, track personnel, and spectators. All fatalities are related to championship car races at the Speedway, unless otherwise known. Okay, so that gives you a list of how everybody that died. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that would be a place, you know, I've never really thought of it. I'm not into racing much. I don't think I've ever really been to a truly professional Speedway. I've been to like some of like the local, you know, things here and there. But one of those massive stadiums, I mean, just the thought of that, 250,000 people can fit into that thing. I mean, that's insane the amount of energy that you would have on those days.
Yeah, and those drivers and those car owners and the mm-hmm. pit crews, the passion they had for what they were doing was incredible too. And I think that type of passion tends to make things linger when they do stick around, you know?
Yeah, I would imagine that those places are very haunted. I would have to guess that if you talk to any employee that, you know, works in like the offices on property on a regular basis, there's got to be stories.
I would think so.
Yeah, I've never thought of that. And honestly, I haven't gotten any over the years about speedways other than this one. But I don't know. Interesting one. If anyone there works at any of those places and has any stories, be sure to write in or call in. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. I think I was a morbid child because I remember I really didn't care about the races as a child, but my dad would watch them. And this sounds horrible, but I think the only reason sometimes I'd watch is like watching and waiting for an accident. Horrible. I was like 8, but I'm like, you know, crash test dummies are fun, but it's like, these are real people. But I would sometimes just watch for that, but that's, you know.
It's the same reason people pull over when there's a car on fire or a house on fire. You know, as morbid as it is, it pulls you in. It's an interesting thing that you don't see every day.
I think there's a lot of people that probably that's their sole reason for watching, but never admit it. Or maybe that's their initial reason for watching and then they get into it. But I don't know. It's it's the whole, you know, it's the dumpster fire type thing. 855-853-4802, our number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your experiences with us. Let's go to another one. It says, hey, guys, love the podcast. I'm chewing through the EPP episodes trying to catch up, but I catch your regular shows as much as possible. I have a few stories to share, but there is so much to write. So I'll share my experiences I had in a house that I grew up in. The house is an old house built in 1890. It's a small bore just outside of the border of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It was my grandmother's house. When we first moved in, I was 8 or 9. My parents were struggling through some tough times, and we had to leave the apartment that we were living in. My grandmother rented us the house for very little money. It was my mother, father, and younger brother, and my two younger sisters. The house had a basement, 2 floors, and an attic that was split into 2 rooms with a wall in the middle and a wooden door. The stairs to the attic were behind a heavy metal door that was always locked because my grandmother used it for storage. Right away after moving in, me and my brother would hear movement in the attic through the ceiling. At first, it was a soft shuffling. Not long after, it turned into bangs and scraping noises. My parents told me it was probably animals that may have found a way in. My father checked one day after he heard a loud bang come the attic. He assumed raccoons had gotten in and were knocking things over. We went up to check. There was nothing out of place. All the boxes were still in neat stacks. The furniture still had the clean plastic on them that my grandmother had put on them. There were also no obvious signs that any animal had been up there, nor was there any way for them to get in. My father just shrugged it off, but I couldn't. Things started to escalate after a while. The shuffles and bangs turned into footsteps. Those footsteps would sometimes be joined by the sound of chairs being pushed across hardwood floors. My youngest sister was 4 currently. My mother had been going through some photo albums and turned to a picture of my grandfather. My sister pointed and said, "That's Gramper." My mother looked up at her and asked how she knew that. She responded very matter-of-factly, "He was in my room last night talking to me." My mother's face went pale and my blood froze instantly. My grandfather had a heart attack and died in the very family room we were sitting in a year before my sister was born. We haven't yet told my baby sister about him or showed her any pictures of him. After a little over a year, my parents got back on their feet. We moved out to an apartment in the city. Fast forward to when I was 14, my dad informed us that he had bought a house. We were moving. I was excited to finally live in a house of our own. That is until I found out we were moving back into that house. My grandmother sold the house to my dad. Me and my brother were to share the attic. I'm not sure exactly what was talking to my little sister in her room that night, but I knew that whatever was in that attic wasn't my grandfather. After me and my brother got our room situated in the attic, things were quiet for a while. We thought to ourselves that we may have over-exaggerated the noises because we were young and maybe it was the house settling, or we may have even imagined it and scared ourselves to death for nothing. We laughed about it and didn't think about it again. That was until the next summer. It started with the feeling something was breathing down your neck. Not figuratively, though. Literally. Exhaling. A slightly cold but damp puff of air right on the back of your neck. It would happen to both of us when one of us was up there alone. The TV and radio would turn on and off on their channels. Channels would occasionally change, and volume would also on both devices. We knew we weren't the only two up there by now. The breath in her necks eventually turned into what felt like an icy finger running along your neck very fast. But there would be nothing. At night, I would lay in bed trying to sleep. Suddenly, a normal everyday shadow would shift or dart off. Upon seeing this, I would get goosebumps immediately. One night, a clock I had hung on my wall was tossed across the room at me. It didn't fall and roll or anything like that. It landed beside me, 7 feet from the wall as I was walking away from that wall, like it was thrown at me but missed. Then the footsteps started again, not in my room. On the steps leading to it, we'd hear that heavy metal door open, then it would bang shut. It made a very distinct noise which echoed up the stairs. Then the stairs would creak, and you could hear a shoe impact the stairs. It was a hard sole shoe, like a dress shoe. It would happen on every step as if someone was walking up the stairs. We'd always think it was my parents or sisters coming up, or if I was alone, I would think it was my brother. Once it sounded just like my brother running up the stairs. I turned around from the TV to ask him a question when he got to the top. He wasn't there. Nobody was there. This happened frequently. Then whatever it was also started turning lights on and off. This only happened in the attic for some reason. I moved out at 18, and as far as I know, my parents never mentioned anything out of the ordinary. My sisters told me that they haven't had anything happen to them up there. My brother doesn't talk about it much, and I haven't had any more experiences since then. Well, not until I started a second job. I think there may be something attached to the building. But I'll write about that another time. I must go into that building now for work. So thanks for reading this, Tony. Keep up the good work. Thoughts on all that?
Well, there's a lot of documented stories about people that have experiences in attics and stuff like that. And one of the thought processes is that energies or entities will go hide. They'll get away from humans and they'll go off into their own space so they can kind of be by themselves. So if that were the case in this house, if the attic were the place of action, when they moved back and took over that space, they may have moved that energy that entity out for at least a brief period of time until it finally felt strong enough or felt strongly enough about getting back in there. And it sounds like that's maybe what happened.
Yeah, I could see that. So when you're a ghost someday, are you going to be like yourself in real life and like be hiding in the attic away from people? Or are you going to be like, fuck this, I can totally screw with everyone now with no regard?
Well, I mean, from the fun side, I do want to mess with people. But yeah. I think the other thing that, you have to take into consideration is once you're gone, we don't know what our energies will be able to do, what kind of powers each individual energy will have. So I think a lot of that depends on what you're able to do. If we believe what we've heard, and some ghosts learn more quickly to use their energy to move things or to manifest or whatever, maybe, I hope I'm not a weak ghost. I hope I'm like one of the strongest ghosts out there, because I really want to wreak some havoc, to be honest with you.
Do you think it's a learning curve when you're a ghost of like how to kind of focus that energy in? Do you think like all human ghosts have the same potential of harnessing their energy to do stuff? Or do you think it's just kind of like, I don't know, almost like it's like a hearing or sight, or it's a gift, it's a talent. It's like, well, guess what? You're born with the more strength as a ghost than others. Or is it that? Is it like, I'm figuring this out and now I can do this better?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think as humans, some of us are stronger at one thing than the other. Maybe somebody's stronger at sports, another person's great at music, another person has gifts in other areas. You can make other areas of your life better, but maybe you're not as strong. I kind of think your energy kind of is that way afterward too. I think you have the ability to do more and achieve more when you're dead, but I still think that there's some things that you're going to be stronger at than others.
It's so many. There's obviously just so many questions that one can ask about any of this. I really wonder how much do you think communication with the other side is going to improve over the course of our lifetime, over the next 30, 40 years? Do you think, I mean, because we already have these apps and these different devices and things like that really kind of give clear, I mean, it's kind of undeniable sometimes, communication that we're getting from something. Do you think that's going to improve more and more over the next couple of years? Or have we kind of hit like a plateau of like, this is, I don't know that you're going to get much better than what we're doing.
I think part of the issue is that until we're able as human beings to open our minds up a little bit and accept the information that we're learning and use it to get more knowledge, I think that's what's going to slow us down. Not necessarily the technology, but the ability to be open to the fact that what we see, hear, taste, smell, feel isn't all there is around us every single day.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's what we have to fight that before we can get beyond where technology is going to take us.
Sure. I just wonder, you know, if someday there is like a ghost box or something that really, I mean, I've been amazed by what I've seen out there with some of these things. I just wonder if we're going to get somewhere someday where it's like, this is clearly undeniably, you're talking to someone who's not there or is dead. And I mean, there's times now where you can argue that, but I just wonder if it's going to be so clear that it's going to like disrupt. I mean, because it would disrupt so many things. You know,
you could talk about that. You can even start talking about like UFOs. If we ever got like evidence of a UFO and we knew that there were aliens flying around, our minds would be blown. I think the same situation is with ghosts and the other, the other side, or if you want to talk about a different plane of existence, whatever that is, that spirits and ghosts are.
Yeah.
Our minds are going to be blown, and there's still going to be a group of people that won't believe it no matter what.
Sure. It's going to throw, like, it would throw a lot of religion for a loop. It would throw, you know, a lot of things for a real loop on what people are going to be able to accept or not. I mean, I guess maybe it's a bridge too far, I'm thinking, though, too, at some point, because we're talking about something that, you know, I'm saying if it is more provable at some point, people have difficulty just accepting things that are completely provable now that have nothing to do with the supernatural.
Correct.
So it's like, well, this is even more questionable. So, it's people just accepting their facts as to what, what's going to feel safe. 855-853-4802 is our number. Let's go to a caller. Hi.
Hello, Jack from Essex again with another mildly interesting ghost story. So my partner is a funeral director, and I kind of accompany her on removals whenever she's on call just to kind of keep her company, even though I sort of have an irrational fear of being around the decedents. And, you know, naturally, given my interest in the paranormal and such, I recently decided to give ghost hunting at the funeral home a try, just to sort of give myself something to do when I'm there on my own. And I feel like I'm kind of like sensitive to the sort of aura of a place, if that makes sense. And I always felt like this just incredibly sad aura in the funeral home. And obviously that could just be me being a coward when it comes to those sorts of places, because I absolutely am. But several of my partner's co-workers mentioned the same sort of atmosphere and how it was just kind of oppressive. And I didn't get a lot, you know, when I first, like one night I saw shadows moving from the corner of my eye, and that could have just been like a visual artifact or something, you know. And I also swear, like one night I felt something breathing on the back of my neck. But again, that could be explained by a lot of things. I told my partner about this, and she told me about how one day she was embalming with another funeral director, and just a collection of mops and brooms and that sort of thing just crashed to the ground while they were making sort of a bad joke about, I think it was just one of their coworkers. But the thing is, they were secured, like they were like clipped in. They shouldn't have been able to fall like that easily, but. You know, it could be explained, probably. So, like, after hearing you guys discussing, like, the Ovilus-type apps during the summer and, you know, hearing Tony and Harper's stories about it, I decided to download one myself and give it a try. And, you know, I was kind of skeptical about it, but it's definitely gotten to the point where I believe it. So on my first go, you know, I was getting a lot of different, seemingly random words every few minutes. I went into the garage and panned around, sort of asking questions. And at one point, my camera settled on the tools that were hanging in the back, one of which was a shovel. And almost immediately, the obvious type app pops up the word spade. Literally while the camera was resting on the spade. So I noted out for that night. I was done with it. I wrote it off as a coincidence. So like a few weeks later, I'm doing it again. I'm sitting in the office while my partner is doing funeral director things. And I got very few hits on the Ovilus that night. There was three of them. That was in like a 20-minute time span. sorry, I lost my train of thought. So I heard like a crashing sound coming from the preparation room, which I would later find out was my partner moving a body onto a cart. And immediately the app pops up with the word disrespectful. Now, I asked what was disrespectful. No response. But then a few seconds later, another crashing sound from the prep room, and it was my partner pulling a decedent into the storage fridge. And once again, it pops up the word disrespectful. And I'd used that app a lot by then, and I'd never seen the same word twice like that. But I'd gotten one word earlier that night, and it was a name. It was the name Zachary. So I later looked up, like, all the decedents who had passed through that funeral home to see if there was a Zachary. And there was only one Zachary who had been through there, and he had died in 2016. And my partner later shared all my stories about this app and shit with her co-workers. And they went on to mess around with it themselves. And they got some interesting things, but the most curious thing was the word jacket. Right when my partner's co-worker sat down on the desk chair that I was sitting in while trying to use the app myself. And so I looked at the app's dictionary, and there was no word for Jack in there by default. And so I find that kind of interesting that I'd given a spirit, potentially, my name while I was sitting in that chair. And a couple days later, that appears as soon as my partner's co-worker sits down in that chair. Like it was asking for me or something, maybe. And so Zachary's kind of become like this de facto member of the team. Like people greet him when they come in. People say goodbye to him. He's got an employee of the month poster hanging up on the stationery cupboard. But the thing I find like really, really interesting is that since everyone started saying hello to this potential spirit and acknowledging him, there's been just almost no activity on this obvious app for anyone. Like I used to get maybe 6 to 10 words, like the span of like 20 minutes, and I get zero in the span of an hour now. And I don't feel that same aura that I used to. Like I'm way more comfortable staying there by myself now. Like previously to all this, I couldn't stand it. I just kind of find it sweet in a way. Like maybe this potential spirit just wanted to be acknowledged. Like maybe all he wanted was for people to know he was there. Because there's literally been just no activity in that area since everyone started talking to it. You know, I tried a few nights ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago now, actually, to do like a proper session. Like I was sitting, there's an apartment above the funeral home, and I was sitting up there. Because everyone always felt this negative aura coming from like upstairs where that apartment is. But I got nothing. I got absolutely nothing. Like, I tried to do a blessing. I tried to say, you know, you're welcome to stay here if you need to stay here. Like, no one minds it. You're okay. And just nothing. Like, in the span of maybe half an hour. You know, I listened to the whole recording, like, when I got home, and there was nothing there either. It's just interesting. There's another story developing at one of their sister funeral homes, which seems a bit more violent. Basically, it's a similar situation where one of the people who work there keeps getting called out on the app. Like, her name, I won't say her name, but her name has popped up 3 times, I think it is now. Like, on this, when one of my partner's co-workers is up there just messing around. And my partner's coworker was up there, like, preparing for a funeral. And she just had the app open. And it called out for her coworker. And my partner's coworker says, like, no, she's not here. She's not going to be here right now. And she hears a banging coming from downstairs, like, in the office. Like, something was hitting, like, the printer or something. And she says, no, you have to stop that. There's going to be a family here soon. And she hears, like, one more bang and nothing else. There was no one else in the funeral home at that time. There were a few other things as well, but I'm pretty sure I'm hitting the 10-minute mark, so I might call in with it when it develops a bit more. In any case, stay safe, you lot. Have a good one. Love the show, etc., etc. Yes, bye.
There you go. Thoughts on all of that and the apps and everything.
My goodness. First of all, this individual, an English accent makes everything more interesting as far as I'm concerned. So he could continue talking the entire night. I just listen. He could be giving recipes for, you know, chips and dip, and I'd still listen to it because an English accent just is always so cool to listen to. But I love the fact that he's super skeptical to begin with. And he questions the Avalis, and he questions this, and he questions that. But the thing that really sticks out is he stayed with it. He has a great amount of respect for whatever is there, whoever is there, whatever the energy's got going on. And he's kind of watched it progress. He didn't go in there, you know, demanding something to happen, make something happen. He just kind of sat back and took it all in as it progressed on its own. And I have to say that I just respect him for doing it in that regard. I think it's just so important. And I think he learned a lot by doing it that way. He learned there was something there. It could be Zachary, could be somebody else. Things have calmed down a little bit, which I think is interesting as well. And just sounds like a proper chap, if you will.
Yes. And I like his attitude on it. And it's a very similar attitude I've been taking when we're using the apps and stuff, too. It's just like, hey, you know, we're here. You're there. We're just trying to communicate. I'm not trying to scare anybody or ask anything crazy. And just being and talking as if you're talking to another person next to you has seemed to yield the best results for me and Harp when we've been out. When we were walking through Rienzi Cemetery, I was saying, hey, because we had been getting a bunch of interesting things that were coming through. And I said, hey, you know, there's the thing in Harper's hand, which was a K2 meter. I said, there's a thing in her hand over there. If you can get close to it, it might make the things, the light bulbs light up on it. But if you could go over and try and do something with that, that'd be great. And the immediate thing that comes out of my thing says meter.
Wow.
On the box, like right as I said it, like, oh, like the meter in her hand, like you're almost like talking down to me, like the thing in someone's hand. You mean that meter there? Like, yes, that meter there. And I don't know. It's just, of all the words that these things can generate, the coincidence level are them all just kind of falling into place so frequently has been what I've been very surprised by. I thought, you know, we're going to get a bunch of rubbish and, you know, I could edit it down and make it look like they were a lot more frequent on video. But quite honestly, and there is a little bit editing involved, but I'd say we're batting like 60-70% on when we do those sessions, that we're getting things that make some sense, that's then usable on camera.
And there's nothing better than something happening and something else happening at the same time. So if you're having that conversation about a K2 meter and you never say K2 meter, but it responds with meter, that's two things that happened right there. You were having the conversation.
Yep.
They responded with that word. So when you get like, when one thing happens, when a light lights up, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. If you get a light lighting up and you get a hit on the K2 and maybe you see something, there's nothing better than more than one piece of evidence that comes across at a specific moment.
And that's what I've been trying to do, because you told me about that, about it, it's really more significant when you have like more than one thing going on. So we always like, we have like the REM pod that's like sitting somewhere, and then, and that's been getting crazy active too. And it's usually in conjunction with us getting some sort of message through one of those apps. It's like, and there it goes. It lights up over there, whether it be the temperature or one of the colors of something being near it. And it's just, I mean, I get it. I get why people get addicted to this, because it's like, this is really weird. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm getting a lot of evidence, far more than I thought I would. So I can see why this draws people in the way it does with investigating. I just don't want to be like one of those people that someday is like, I'm telling a story on someone else's show where it's like, and then it got really dark after this one place. So I'm like, I'm just trying to keep it light and breezy and not going into anything super dark. You know, we'll wait till she gets a little bit older for that. Then we can get all the attachments and have all of our fun with that and our family exorcisms. But no, interesting story. Thank you for sharing that with us. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. And that's going to wrap up today's episode of the program. If you like it, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Get access to all the bonus episodes, advanced episodes. It's all there for you to binge away on at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, for Todd, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.